And we'll come out before the final portion of that overture, or sinfonia, if you prefer, to Verdi's opera Nabucco, in a performance here by the Berlin Philharmonic, conducted by Claudio Abbado, on Live and Local here on FM 90.9. The show is your connection to local performances. I'm Kevin Kelly. Thanks for joining us for the program today. Coming up, I will be talking with a singer-songwriter based in Cleveland, named Diana Chittister. She's going to be performing tomorrow in Rochester at Walnut Street Winery. And we'll hear some of her work and hear what she has to say about her work. But first, my conversation is with Eugene Power, who is the music director of the Sangamon Valley Youth Symphony Program based in Springfield. And as part of that, he's also therefore music director of the Sangamon Valley Community Orchestra. So the Youth Symphony Program is sort of multifaceted. They have concerts this Friday and Saturday. So tomorrow and Saturday, three different performances with four or five different groups. And we'll get the lay of the land from Gene Power. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Sangamon Valley Youth Symphony, a group that I had some familiarity with years ago, and at the time they didn't have a community orchestra, and so I was reading on your website that I guess there was a long ago history of community orchestras in the Springfield area, and then the Illinois Symphony came along or retooled the community orchestra, turned it into a professional orchestra, and then there wasn't any community orchestra for a while until its resurrection. Not under your leadership, I don't think, but you now have that program.
So, right.
Why don't you give us an overview of the Youth Symphony Program and how the community orchestra fits in?
Sure. Well, our Youth Symphony Program is basically we are the string program in Springfield. There's no public school string programs, and that's partially the reason why the program began back when school districts had string programs. There was no youth symphony, but there was a reaction to school districts kind of getting rid of their string programs for budgetary reasons and things like that. And so since the 70s, really, this program has been around kind of filling that role in the community. And we start kids in about third grade with our starter strings program. And that we have about, it varies from year to year, but we try to have about 6 to 8 schools that, or more if we can, that are starter strings locations where we have a teacher in the school that does a lesson with the kids, a group lesson once a week. And then we try to get the kids going on private lessons. And that's sort of their first experience with a string instrument.
So in that case, you're actually sending representatives of your program into the schools and working there.
Yes, or we find that, for instance, one of our starter strings teachers is a second grade teacher at the school where she does the starter strings program. She's a violinist, and so is in charge of the program there. Or a music teacher at the school that has some string background will take over one of the programs or something like that. So that's kind of the basic level for us. And then we have a junior strings orchestra, which is kind of the next step up once they've had a little bit of experience on the instrument. The junior strings is sort of the second year. And then that hopefully kind of gets them ready to get into what we call the preparatory orchestra. And that's the first level that I conduct And that's an all-string ensemble. And it's kids that have been in our program for a couple of years or have taken private lessons, and it's the first time they've ever been in an ensemble. So now they're playing. What the purpose of that orchestra or group is actually to teach them to how to play in an ensemble. So they've got to have some facility on their instruments, and then they come into the orchestra and learn how to play as a section in the violin section or the viola section or cello, bass, whatever. And it's a great opportunity for kids to start playing more challenging music, you know, getting them ready to kind of play Verdi, like we just heard a little bit ago. Then our next level above that is called the concert orchestra, and that's, we add winds and percussion to that. So now we have, it's middle school aged orchestra, and it's basically open for kids who play any orchestral instruments. So we have kids that are from band programs that have never played in an orchestra before, and we have our string kids as well. And then the symphony orchestra is the top level, and that's mainly high school kids. There's some middle school kids, like eighth graders, in there right now. And that's the group that plays the most challenging repertoire that we of the youth orchestra program that we have. And so we'll play a couple of originals. We do, you know, like we're doing this Nabucco overture that we heard by Verdi. We're doing Mendelssohn Wedding March, you know, some stuff like that. And then we also do, I'll pull in different arrangements that are made for, you know, kind of an advanced high school level ensemble to play with them as well. And then the community orchestra is kind of its own entity within our organization. We have some former youth orchestra members that play in the community orchestra, and we have a lot of longtime community members. They play in the municipal bands, or, you know, they just want to keep playing an instrument, and so they're performing with that group as well. So it's quite an array of levels and abilities and talents and everything.
So you lead three of those groups or four of those groups?
Four of the groups, yeah.
So all but the starter strings and the junior strings.
Right.
Let me mention what the performance dates are. There is a concert tomorrow night by the Community Orchestra,
right,
which is going to be at the Hoagland Center for the Arts in Springfield. That starts at 7:30. And then the other concerts are both on Saturday, 1 o'clock and at 5 o'clock. At 1 o'clock, it'll be the Symphony and Prep Orchestra. And at 5 o'clock, the concert orchestra and starter strings. And did the junior strings show up there somewhere?
Yes, they play with the on the 5 o'clock concert as well.
Okay, so, and both of those will be at Springfield High School Auditorium.
Right.
So two different locations for those. You said the concert orchestra middle school. Mm-hmm. Is it limited by age, or is it limited by ability and happens to be mostly middle school?
It's more of the ability factor. We do auditions. So for instance, actually, we're going to be auditioning for next year's ensembles next Tuesday and Wednesday from 4 to 9 p.m. at the Hoagland Center. We've got people that are signing up that have either not been in the ensembles before, or they want to move up from one ensemble to another. So we're holding our auditions for next season next week. And so it kind of shakes out to be, if there's a really talented middle school kid, of course, that we would put them in the symphony orchestra. That being said, you know, older kids generally tend to be have more ability on their instruments, so they generally end up kind of separating themselves by grade level. But it's not unheard of to have, or even to have, like a ninth grader or a younger kid playing a concertmaster role or something like that in the older group as well.
As you would expect.
Yeah.
You know. So you have, as most youth orchestra programs have, I believe, an opportunity for students to solo with the orchestra by virtue of a competition.
Right.
Do you call this your concerto competition or some similar?
It's the Sangamon Valley Youth Symphony Concerto Competition. We hold it this year. We held it in February. We had five students that performed. We got judges from the community. One of them was an Illinois Symphony member. Another was a local band director. And then they performed, and our winner, Meredith Krafasi, she's a violinist. She's actually our concertmaster. She's going to be playing the Kreisler Prelude and Allegro.
So is this limited to, does it have to be students who are in the orchestra program?
Yes. Yes.
So they can't just be interlopers and
right.
come in from the local band and
exactly.
not play in the group. Well, the piece she's going to play is by Fritz Kreisler, Preludium and Allegro. I thought we'd play a little bit of that from performance that features the violinist Isaac Stern with the Franz Liszt Chamber Orchestra, music by Fritz Kreisler, which will be played by Meredith Grifasi and the Symphony Orchestra as part of the Sangamon Valley Youth Symphony Program, which Gene Power conducts. He's my guest on Live and Local this portion of the program. A taste of a piece by Fritz Kreisler called Preludium and Allegro, obviously for violin and orchestra. Most I haven't heard actually with piano, I think. Performance here by violinist Isaac Stern and the Franz Liszt Chamber Orchestra. And you can hear as soloist the winner of this year's concerto competition for the Sangamon Valley Youth Symphony, who is the orchestra's concertmaster, Meredith Grifasi. I should say she's the concertmaster of the top orchestra, the Symphony Orchestra, who will accompany her under the direction of Eugene Power Gene's my guest this portion of Live and Local as they have concerts coming up this weekend. Our program today is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, breathing life into the history of our nation's musical past through exhibits, guided tours, and performances at the University of Illinois. More information is available and visits can be scheduled at 217-333-4577. So regarding the top orchestra in particular, for the youth program and then also the concert orchestra, what's your approach to deciding what pieces to play? I imagine it's always limited to some degree by who you've got in the orchestra in a given year.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting. It really does take time to get to know the ensemble a little bit. I think one of the things that's really helpful is being able to listen to auditions and seating auditions and things like that, just to really get a sense of the ability level of the group individually so that you know what you're working with. And that being said, when I took the position, this is my first year as the music director of this group, and when I took the position, I basically had about 4 days to get all of the music picked and ready to go for the first rehearsal. And so I kind of took a big guess, and I picked, you know, what I thought might work based on my past experience. But after the first semester, I kind of got to know the group a little bit better. And so I think I was able to be a little bit more successful in finding music that would fit not only the ensemble's ability level, but like you said, any instrumentation, you know, limitations that we have. For instance, we don't have a lot of percussionists, so I couldn't pick huge percussion features or anything like that. We're limited in our brass section as well, so we, you know, I have to be careful that I don't pick huge brass heavy pieces. We do have a couple of community orchestra members that are coming in to sit in with the symphony orchestra to augment us a little bit for our performance on Saturday afternoon, and that's pretty crucial for the Verdi, as you know.
Yeah, the Verdi Nabucco Overture, where we heard it at first. Do you have it go the other way around, where some of the top symphony orchestra members also play with the community orchestra?
We actually have one student right now. One of our percussionists is playing in both groups because we needed a third percussionist to join us for the community orchestra, and he agreed. And I think it's been a really good experience for him to play with the adults.
There is a nice mix of repertoire between all of the orchestras. I'm looking at the program here, and of course the preparatory orchestra, as you would expect, has shorter pieces that are they're deliberately written for younger orchestras. The concert orchestra, you have some arrangements of some pretty well known pieces like movement from the New World Symphony of Dvorak. But I note that both for the concert orchestra and the symphony orchestra, you've got some music from films.
Yes.
From The Hobbit, so that would be pretty new music, and then also from Pirates of the Caribbean.
Right.
And I know that the kids are always clamoring for music from Pirates of the Caribbean. What's the appeal, do you think?
You know,
you're even ending the program with it.
I think the melodies are very memorable, and it's whoever, you know, I basically think that the composer of that piece or in that film score really knew what works, you know, what's fun to play, it really accompanies the action in the film really well. And this arrangement of it, I've done it, this I think is like my fifth time doing it with either a band or an orchestra, and it always is a winner. I mean, everybody just, it's fun to play. It's not too difficult to get it to sound really good. And so it's kind of like it's like the dessert after a very well-balanced meal of other classical pieces.
Yeah, it would be fun music, and it's a little bit tongue-in-cheek because the movies are a little bit tongue-in-cheek.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, they're adventuresome and so on, but they're also, after all, you have Johnny Depp as this Jack Sparrow.
Right,
you know,
right. Yeah.
Which is always an amusing character. Well, I've been happy to have the chance to talk to you a little bit and hear and let our listeners know about the program. And, of course, we hope that many listeners who are in the area will go hear one or more, maybe all three of the concerts. It's the Sangamon Valley Community Orchestra tomorrow night at 7:30 at the Hoagland Center for the Arts. And then on Saturday at 1 o'clock, the Symphony and Preparatory Orchestras at Springfield High School Auditorium. And later on in the day at 5 o'clock, the Concert Orchestra, Junior Strings, Starter Strings programs performing also in Springfield High School Auditorium. Several of those groups going to be conducted by my guest this portion of the show, Eugene Power. Let's go out with one of the pieces that you've programmed for the community orchestra concert. So this is, will this actually end tomorrow's night's concert?
Yes.
So this is the first of four Scottish dances by English composer Malcolm Arnold. It's some fun music, and I'm sure your players are having a blast with it.
This is, I think, their favorite.
Andrew Penny conducting the Queensland Symphony Orchestra in the first of the four Scottish dances by Malcolm Arnold. All four of them will be on tomorrow night's concert by the Sangamon Valley Community Orchestra, playing at the Hoagland Center for the Arts in Springfield. It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. And next on our program, I will be talking with Diana Chittister, who is a singer-songwriter based in Cleveland. She's coming to Walnut Street Winery in Rochester tomorrow for a show that starts at 8 o'clock. And here's a sample of her music.
But you don't know where that is. And I'm searching for the North Star. Safely got me in, though I'm already shipwrecked in an ocean. I don't know where I am or where I'll be. If I ever make it home, that's where I'll be. Never make it home. And you're giving in laughter through a brutal honesty. Here I expect we'll soon be after the night from you and me. Cause it's a sudden simple strangeness to love I've known so long, and I have no worries. Waters. I've been training for too long to see where I'll be. If I ever make it home, here's where I'll be. Yeah, yeah. if I ever make it home. But I can hear your orders loud and clear, directing us to nowhere and leading us with fear. Yeah, 'cause it's a love that I have come to lose, direction that I couldn't choose. And I'm ready to jump in the waters, find if I could ever make it to where I'll be if I ever make it home. If I ever make it.
Find My Way Home is the name of the song by Diana Chittister, both the writer and the singer, and it will be the title track for her forthcoming CD, which she expects to have out in the summer. She is going to be performing tomorrow night in Rochester at Walnut Street Winery, and she's my guest this portion of Live and Local. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. And it's always fun to talk to somebody who is on the road, which meaning literally.
Literally, and, as we're speaking, I'm on the road.
En route at the moment to Indianapolis, I guess.
Yes.
So this is sort of kicking off a tour to a pre-CD release tour.
Yes, that's correct. We're calling it our spring tour, and it's to get people excited about the new music that's coming. So I am performing songs from the new record that's coming out midsummer.
And you're, I learned that you're a native of my home state of Pennsylvania, but currently resident of Cleveland or just outside. What took you from one to the other?
Well, I grew up in Pennsylvania. My father's a minister, so we moved just about every 2 to 4 years. For the most part, I was in the Western Pennsylvania. And whenever I graduated from college, I didn't have a place necessarily to call home because I had moved so frequently. So I was under the impression that Cleveland had a really strong music community, because if you visit the city, first of all, that's home of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but you also see electric guitar statues on the street corners. And when I arrived there, I did find a really strong blues community that kind of had them take me under wing and get me started as far as performing out. So that's what brought me there, and that's what kept me there.
So you did find enough of a music scene in any event.
I did find a music scene. I have since then, traveling to other cities, I see the differences in music scenes. Cleveland does have a very blues-focused and cover band scene, so sometimes it's a little bit of a struggle for the singer-songwriter to take off in that area. However, the city's been very kind to me, and for whatever reason, maybe they just, like me. Could be it. But I've been very fortunate to be able to build an audience there in that city, though it's probably not the city for, like I said, singer-songwriter or the folk scene anymore.
Well, tell me a little bit about what compelled you to be a songwriter, to write songs at all. I mean, you said you've had people who you like, of course, so I assume there's influences, but that doesn't necessarily compel somebody to do it herself.
Right. Well, it's changed a lot, really, and with age. When I first started playing music, I was in my early 20s. Well, I was younger than that. I was playing in college at coffee shops and that. And I was under the impression that if you play your instrument and you sing, people would think you are good. And then, you'll just explode like all those musicians that I saw on TV. And so there was that little bit of celebrity idea that I think first got me started with playing. But now getting out where I'm actually 29 and just about to turn 30, where now when I'm playing, I see there's a difference. When I take the stage, if there could be just a handful of people in the room, but if I share the right story before I perform a particular song, it's amazing to see how people will come up afterwards and they'll say how a story influenced them that night or something that they relate to, even if it's not the identical experience that I had that led to me writing a song. It's very cool to see how they interpret whatever the story behind the song is and how they relate to it. And so, you know, once you get in it and you start meeting people, even if, like I said, even if it's a handful of people that are in a room, you have an effect on them, and there's a connection that happens, and I think that now is my driving force.
You know, the song that I opened up with, Find My Way Home, arguably I should have not opened up with that one, but opened with a different song, which is called Battle Scars. Because
yeah.
I understand in your own personal biography, they go the other way around in what
right.
they're talking about.
Yeah, that's you're absolutely right. I wrote Battle Scars when I moved away from home. As I mentioned, I came from a strongly religiously influenced background. My father was a minister, and I had a wonderful family, a very caring parents, very giving. But there are some things in my life that led me to break away from the religious traditions that came along with my family. And that put some distance between us. And the song Battle Scars talks about that, to break away from what I grew up with and how it almost made me a stranger. I felt like a stranger when I would go back around my family because we didn't know what to talk to each other about. And everybody was very guarded and things were awkward. And it was based off of this belief system. And Find My Way Back Home is a song that I wrote just about 8 years later, where I was actually literally going back to Pennsylvania and to talk with my family and try to reconcile some of our differences and just see if I can move us past some of our awkwardness. And, you know, things change as you get older. And the best way to say that is even once I revisited home, your home changes. What the definition of a home is changes. And that's what that song is referring to.
Find My Way Home. Well,
yeah.
Let's do it. Let's do the reverse order and play the other song, The Battle Scars. This came off of your EP from about 5 years ago called Soul. And it's Diana Chittister here on Live and Local. She's going to be performing at Walnut Street Winery in Rochester tomorrow night for a show that starts at 8 o'clock. She's my guest on Live and Local, this portion of the program on FM 90.9.
My warm breath against the cold winter glass. His fingertips speak hello with each eye drawn backwards in the fog that shrivels and slowly retracts, erasing my greeting. So all you're seeing is my stare. Skin sore now with the bandage used to be, was ripped away so violently with no preparing count to three. So the pain was shocking and unbearable. What lies uncovered is worse than that temporary. Oh. I beg thee for forgiveness for my leaving.
Battle Scars by Diana Chittister, songwriter and the singer and the guitarist here on Live and Local. She'll be in Rochester for a show tomorrow night. She's my guest on Live and Local. You know, you sort of avoided saying what the issue was with your parents, and I was reading an article in Cleveland.com here that was pretty recently, well, maybe it's about 9 months or so ago. And it does have to do with sexuality, which are huge issues between out people and parents, or they certainly can be. But I understand that, you know, that always informs a songwriter's songs. Well, I mean, many songwriters do draw on personal experience very heavily, and I understand that you are one of those that does.
Right. Yeah, and that was the main issue, being in a same-gender relationship. I've been in a relationship for, we're going on 6 years, we've been together, but I came out to my family when I was in my early 20s, again, and that is what led me to physically move away from where I was living in Pennsylvania and move out on my own and start building my own life. And because of that separation, you know, everything financially, I was separated from them. I had to find my own way supporting myself and paying bills. And emotionally, when I had to deal with, you know, any kind of heartache or any kind of, you know, even a breakup, I didn't have my siblings to lean on or my family to lean on. I really had to find my own way and build my own life for myself. And I think that is why there was an 8-year separation. It took me so long to finally go back, because by the time I did, I was very confident in who I was. I have a great relationship that I'm proud of, and I know is a long-term relationship. And I have my identity as a musician, and it took some time to build it, but that's what finally gave me the strength to actually go back and try to rebuild the past from what it was, or at least see how the past was, where it fit into my life at this point.
How much do activism and songwriting go hand in hand for you?
A lot. And that was a big lesson for me to learn even 2 years ago. I put out a CD called In This Skin back in 2011, and it was a full band project that I did. And when I first started touring that CD or performing in support of that album, I was working with the band. And I put together a show where the band literally just fell apart. You know, the drummer wasn't available, and the bass player, I don't know, whatever. And I decided, okay, let's just do the show solo. And I had always been performing solo, but as far as the bigger shows, the ones in venues and all that, I always had a band. So I put just myself on stage, and I realized that it was extremely important that I tell the stories behind each song. And when it is just me on stage and my guitar, I felt that fear, not being able to get my words together and not being able to say exactly what I was thinking. And I realized how hard it is to speak about topics to audiences, people. But when I finally did, and I made myself open up about it and telling an opinion, but also just telling my side of what happened and how that affected people afterwards. And I realized, okay, well, this is actually giving purpose to being a songwriter. This is more than just I'm coming up here playing a handful of songs that I wrote. These songs, they mean something, and to a listener, they can mean even more. And I know that you, for me, the musicians that I respond to are the ones that spoke up, that said something different. That's what I've always taken away from art in general, the ones that made a point. And that's what I realized, the more that issues are talked about, the easier they become to talk about them. Or there's kind of a big thing in the LGBT community about the reason that people need to come out is that friends and family need to realize that they have friends and family that are LGBT, that are gay, that are lesbian, that are transgender. And sometimes just even knowing that you know somebody that is will change your perspective on how you view a community of people. So that was a long-winded answer. But, yeah, I see the extreme importance in the activism, the songwriting, being able to tell exactly why I wrote a song and making sure there's purpose in the story that I'm telling.
Let me ask you briefly about your guitar playing, because let's just say it's better than your average singer-songwriter's guitar playing.
That's cool. Thank you.
I heard some of the album with the band, and in a way you sort of take a back seat. Well, you don't take a back seat, but your guitar playing gets a little bit lost in that compared to when it's just you. And I just wonder what was your training as a guitarist, and how did you evolve the style that you have?
Well, it's interesting to hear you say about the band, because that was the reason that I did a solo CD, is because the biggest piece of feedback that I got was the guitar playing was absent. It got covered up by the band. And so the new album is all solo, so that it nothing is lost. And as far as training, it's a kind of a joke, but bars, honestly, when you first start playing music, most of the time are showing up and playing in the corner during, 25-cent wing night. And it's the object or the obstacle for the night is trying to get the drunk guy's attention at the bar and trying to get his attention away from the game that's on the TV and to glance over at you while you're, singing your heart out into a microphone. But as a result, I had to learn how to make a bigger sound on the instrument. I didn't play with a band. I never really found the right group of musicians for me. I've worked with a lot of talented people, but as far as finding that right vibe, I just never found it. And so I learned how to replace the bass player by picking out the bass line, or if I wanted that thumping sound, like as a drummer, to be able to pound on the guitar while drumming the rhythm, or picking out a particular almost lead section of a song. So it really had to become opening up the entire instrument. And I have a lot of influence around me too. The guitar players that I gravitate toward, the ones that I listen to, are usually the ones that think outside the box with playing, using alternate tunings, using different finger picking styles. And I think you take all of that and you throw it in to a person, then that's how you get the particular guitar style that I have.
Well, if you don't mind our going out with a song that isn't originally yours, particular rendition shows off guitar playing quite a lot, and it's Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah. What made you pick this song to cover? And maybe follow-up to that is what makes you pick any song to cover when you're primarily a songwriter?
Yeah, well, a lot of the times the songs that I pick to cover, I like those more classic songs. And I do a Tom Waits song, I do a Leonard Cohen song. I'm working on a lot of newer Lindsey Buckingham songs, or I shouldn't say newer, but they're newer to me. A lot of the Fleetwood Mac, and of course Ani DiFranco is another one. Usually what makes me pick a cover that I'm going to do is something with the guitar work that's standing out, or something lyrically. And I try to stay away from the typical songs that the stereotypes would expect me to play. Songs like Alanis Morissette, or Melissa Etheridge. These are artists that I really, really like. But a lot of times as a singer-songwriter, female, those are the ones you're expected to. Sometimes I just try to find something a little more outside the box. The thing with Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah song that led me to do that is I just happened to be listening to it because another friend of mine that's a musician, she covered the song, and I really liked her version of it. So I was just kind of had it on my iPod or something, and I visited home with my dad, and it was one of the few times that he pulled out his guitar, and he and I were both playing guitar at the same time, which hadn't happened in years, that he and I would actually sit down and play the guitar. And he just so happened to be working on the song Hallelujah because something at a church celebration that was happening, they were going to be performing that song, and he was trying to pick out the chords. And so it was one of those moments where he and I were speaking the same language for the first time in a couple years. We were both sitting down working on the song Hallelujah, and that's when the lyrics hit me, how they literally reference the religious world, and it was almost this gray area between the non-religious and the religious, and I thought it was just very intriguing to me. So that was why that song stuck with me, and I ended up doing it on stage.
So you could call it sort of a communion song between you and your dad.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. More communion. Yeah.
It's Hallelujah, Leonard Cohen, sung by Diana Chittister, who is, of course, also the guitarist here. And she's going to be performing tomorrow night at Walnut Street Winery in Rochester, Illinois, for a show that starts at 8 and will go till about 11 o'clock. and it's been really a treat to talk to you on the phone. Tell us your web address so people can find out a little bit more about you, look at pictures and all that stuff.
Yeah, that'd be great. My web address is my first and last name, which is Diana, D-I-A-N-A, Chittister, chittister.com. And a big thank you to all show dates and ways to contact me, too. I'd love to hear from you.
And thank you very much for joining us on the program today.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate you reaching out.
Was a secret chord that David played, and it pleased the Lord. But you don't really care for music, do you? It goes like this: the fourth, the fifth, the minor falls, the major lifts, baffled king. Was strong, but you needed proof. You saw her bathing on the roof, the beauty in the moonlight overthrew you. She tied you to a kitchen chair. She broke your throne. She cut your hair, and from your lips, she drew. Been here before. I've seen these walls and I've walked these floors. I used to live alone here before I knew you. I saw your flag on a marble arch, but love is not a victory march. All that I have ever learned from love how to shoot somebody who outdrew you. It's not a cry that you hear at night. It's not somebody who has seen the light. It's cold and it's a broken hallelujah. Hallelujah.
Diana Chittister doing Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah. She will be at Walnut Street Winery in Rochester tomorrow from 8 until 11 p.m. Hearing her on Live and Local, where our broadcast is made possible with support from these business partners: A Plus Farms Limited, Pine Village, Prairie Ridge Farms Incorporated of Allerton, Birch Tree Counseling and Consulting of Champaign, and Michael Walker Consulting of Urbana. These business partners join the Friends of WYLL in making great programs possible, and we thank you. This is 90.9 WYLL FM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville.